It's
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Dan Novak. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Russian President Vladimir Putin on Tuesday defended the war in Ukraine as a noble mission, following claims of rape and violence against civilians and possible use of chemical weapons. At a ceremony marking the 61st anniversary of the Soviet Union putting the first man into space, Putin said of the invasion, "Its goals are absolutely clear and noble." He added, "We didn't have a choice. It was the right decision." The Russian president repeated his claim that the aim was to protect people in areas of eastern Ukraine and to protect Russia's own security. Since Putin sent Russian troops to Ukraine on February 24th, about a quarter of Ukraine's 44 million population has been forced from their homes. Cities have been destroyed by airstrikes, and thousands of Ukrainians have been killed or injured. In the southern Ukrainian city of Mariupol, the city's leader told the Associated Press that more than 10,000 civilians may have been killed in the war. As the city prepares for another offensive, Ukraine and Western officials are investigating a claim that a poisonous substance was dropped on fighters defending the city. The fighters belong to the Azov Regiment, a far-right group that is now part of the Ukrainian military. Pavlo Kirilenko is governor of the eastern Donetsk area. He told CNN, "We know that last night around midnight, a drone dropped some so far unknown explosive device, and the people that were in and around the Mariupol metal plant, there were three people, they began to feel unwell." Ukrainian Deputy Defense Minister Hanna Malyar said it was possible that phosphorus munitions had been used in Mariupol. She added, "Official information will come later." Earlier on Monday, Donetsk separatist leader Eduard Basurin spoke on Russian state television. He said the group will use chemical troops against Ukrainian soldiers at a large steel factory in Mariupol to smoke them out of there. He then told Russia's Interfax news agency Tuesday that the separatist forces haven't used any chemical weapons in Mariupol. Russia's defense ministry has not answered requests for comment. British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss said her country was working urgently to investigate the report. And U.S. Defense Department spokesman John Kirby said in a statement that the U.S. could not confirm the drone report out of Mariupol. The use, production, and storage of chemical weapons are banned under the 1997 Chemical Weapons Convention. Phosphorus is not considered a chemical weapon under the convention. The substance, however, can cause severe burning. Its use is banned in civilian areas. After failing to capture the capital city of Kyiv, Russia pulled back its forces from surrounding areas and centered its efforts in the east. The withdrawal of Russian forces from towns around Kyiv
brought more charges of war crimes, including murder and rape.
The United States has sharply increased the number of Ukrainians it is admitting into the country through Mexico. Officials in the Mexican city of Tijuana said last week that about 1,000 refugees from Ukraine were waiting to cross into the U.S. Tijuana sits just across the border from San Diego, California. The Mexican city has become a final stop for Ukrainians seeking refuge in the U.S. as Russia continues its military campaign in Ukraine. Information has spread on social media that a volunteer group is helping to guide hundreds of refugees daily from Tijuana's airport to temporary shelters. The group is made up largely of Slavic churches in the western United States. In less than 2 weeks, the volunteers were able to set up an effective network that provided food, security, transportation, and shelter, the Associated Press reported. Refugees generally spend 2 to 4 days in the shelters before receiving approval to enter the U.S. They are permitted to enter on a program that aims to meet urgent humanitarian needs. U.S. officials said they started processing Ukrainians on April 6th through a pedestrian crossing in San Diego that had been temporarily closed to the public. The crossing seeks to process 578 people a day with the help of 24 officers, said Enrique Lucero, Tijuana's Director of Migrant Affairs. "We feel so lucky, so blessed," said Tatiana Bondarenko. She traveled through Moldova, Romania, Austria, and Mexico before arriving in San Diego with her husband and 3 children. She said her goal was to reach Sacramento, California, to live with her mother, who she had not seen for 15 years. Another Ukrainian family took pictures near a sign for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection at San Diego's San Ysidro Port of Entry. Volunteers offered food to refugees who waited for family to pick them up or for buses to take them to a nearby church. "We realized we had a problem that the government wasn't going to solve, so we solved it," said Phil Metzger. He is with Calvary Church outside San Diego. Some refugees stay in the homes of church members, while others sleep on temporary beds inside the church. Metzger told the Associated Press that Ukrainian refugees seeking to reach the U.S. through Mexico see it as an easier path than seeking refuge in busy Europe, where millions of Ukrainians have settled. The administration of President Joe Biden has said it will admit up to 100,000 Ukrainians. It set an overall refugee limit of 125,000 in the 12-month period that ends September 30th. But only 8,758 had been accepted by March 31st, including 704 Ukrainians. I'm Brian Lynn.
American students had been learning from home for more than a year during the pandemic. When they returned to in-person learning, teachers began to see more behavioral problems. Sarah Potpinka is an art teacher at Putnam High School in Connecticut. She said, coming back into the building, a lot of kids fell out of the good habits they had built up in previous years. Potpinka said she saw more fights and arguments among students online and in person. Some refused to wear the required face coverings. Other students broke school rules by leaving in the middle of class to meet up with friends. Obviously, throughout this pandemic, the students spent a lot of time at home, and because of that, they lack in those social skills, said Danielle Trejo. She is a school counselor in Austin, Texas. Bad behavior among students is part of what experts are calling a mental health crisis among children. Even before the pandemic, research found that bad behavior in the classroom was increasing. Childhood depression is also a serious problem. A group of mental health organizations says in a recent Hopeful Futures campaign report that one in three students reported feeling lonely or hopeless. Half of all mental illness presents by the age of 14, but few students get the services they need. The report, released last month, also warns that suicide is the second leading cause of death among those aged 14 to 18 in 2019. Richard Douglas is a school psychologist at Putnam High School with over 30 years of experience. He agrees that the mental health crisis existed before the pandemic. Douglas said that during the pandemic, there have been many things that disrupt families. More time at home could lead to more arguments with family members. A parent or family member could have gotten sick with COVID or lost a job, leading to more stress, Douglas said. At Putnam, many students also work to help pay for housing costs. Douglas feels school officials provide enough support to deal with the crisis at Putnam. For the school of around just 250 students, there is also a counselor, social worker, and two recently hired interventionists. Interventionists help identify learning and behavioral problems among students. But many school systems around the U.S. say they need more psychologists and counselors. The Hopeful Futures campaign report says most American states do not provide enough resources for mental health support in schools. Only Idaho and the District of Columbia go beyond the nationally recommended number of one psychologist for every 500 students. In some states, including West Virginia, Missouri, Texas, and Georgia, there is only one school psychologist for over 4,000 students. President Joe Biden has proposed $1 billion in new federal money to help schools hire more counselors and psychologists. And school systems have used pandemic aid to add mental health services. Despite behavioral problems among students after returning to in-person classes, Potpinka said the change has been better for the students. She said it is easier to keep students engaged in schoolwork face-to-face. It is also easier to seek help for them when there is trouble. Douglas added that school psychologists are now trying to undo the harm that's been done during the pandemic. I'm Dan Novak.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today we tell about life in the United States during the 1960s. The 1960s began with the election of the first president born in the 20th century, John Kennedy. For many Americans, the young president represented a spirit of hope for the nation. When Kennedy was murdered in 1963, many felt that their hopes died too. This was especially true of young people and members and supporters of minority groups. A time of innocence and hope soon began to look like a time of anger and violence. Many Americans protested to demand an end to the unfair treatment of black citizens. Many more protested to demand an end to the war in Vietnam. And many protested to demand full equality for women. By the middle of the 1960s, it had become almost impossible for President Lyndon Johnson to leave the White House without facing protesters against the war in Vietnam. In March of 1968, Johnson announced that he would not seek another term in office. In addition to President Kennedy, two other influential Americans were murdered during the 1960s. Civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. was shot in Memphis, Tennessee in 1968. Several weeks later, Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother, was shot in Los Angeles, California. He was campaigning to win his party's nomination for president. The two murders resulted in riots in cities across the country. The unrest and violence affected many young Americans. The effect seemed especially bad because of the time in which they had grown up. By the middle 1950s, most of their parents had jobs that paid well. They expressed satisfaction with their lives. They taught their children what were called middle-class values. These included a belief in God, hard work, and service to their country. Later, many young Americans began to question these beliefs. They felt that their parents' values were not enough to help them deal with the social and racial difficulties of the 1960s. They rebelled by letting their hair grow long and by wearing unusual clothing. Their dissatisfaction was strongly expressed in music. Rock and roll music had become very popular in America in the 1950s. Some people, however, did not approve of it. They thought it was too sexual. These people disliked the rock and roll of the 1960s even more. They found the words especially unpleasant. The musicians themselves thought the words were extremely important. As singer and songwriter Bob Dylan said, "There would be no music without the words." Bob Dylan produced many songs of social protest. He wrote anti-war songs before the war in Vietnam became a violent issue in the United States. One was called "Blowin' in the Wind."
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
In addition to songs of social protest, rock and roll music continued to be popular in America during the 1960s. The most popular group, however, was not American, it was British, the Beatles. Four rock and roll musicians from Liverpool. The Beatles' song, I Want to Hold Your Hand, went on sale in the United States at the end of 1963. Within 5 weeks, it was the biggest selling record in the country. Other songs, including some by the Beatles, sounded more revolutionary. They spoke about drugs and sex, although not always openly.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies.
In the 1960s, do your own thing became a common expression. It meant to do whatever you wanted without feeling guilty. 500,000 young Americans did their own thing at the Woodstock Music Festival in 1969. They gathered at a farm in New York State. They listened to musicians such as Jimi Hendrix and Joan Baez, and to groups like The Who and Jefferson Airplane.
Look what's happening on the street, got a revolution. Hey, I'm dancing down the street, got a revolution. Hey, been waving on the people I meet, got a revolution.
Woodstock became a symbol of the young people's rebellion against traditional values. Many young people called themselves hippies. Hippies believed there should be more love and personal freedom in America. In 1967, poet Allen Ginsberg helped lead a gathering of hippies in San Francisco. No one knows exactly how many people considered themselves hippies, but 20,000 attended the gathering. Another leader of the event was Timothy Leary.
Now, energy comes.
He was a former university professor and researcher. Leary urged the crowd in San Francisco to tune in and drop out. This meant they should use drugs and leave school or their job. One drug that was used in the 1960s was lysergic acid diethylamide, or LSD. LSD causes the brain to see strange, colorful images. It can also cause brain damage. Some people say the Beatles' song, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, was about LSD.
Well, now take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away.
As many Americans were listening to songs about drugs and sex, many others were watching television programs with traditional family values. These included The Andy Griffith Show and The Beverly Hillbillies. At the movies, some films captured the rebellious spirit of the times. These included The Graduate and Dr. Strangelove.
Deterrence is the art of producing in the mind of the enemy the fear to attack. And so, because of the automated and irrevocable decision-making process which rules out human meddling, the doomsday machine is terrifying. It's simple to understand and completely credible and convincing.
Gee, I wish we had one of them doomsday machines.
Other films offered escape through spy adventures like the James Bond films. Many Americans refused to tune in and drop out in the 1960s. They took no part in the social revolution. Instead, they continued leading normal lives of work, family, and home. Others, the activists of American society, were busy fighting for peace and racial and social justice.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend.
Women's groups, for example, were seeking equality with men. They wanted the same chances as men to get a good education and a good job. They also demanded equal pay for equal work. A widely popular book on women in modern America was called The Feminine Mystique. It was written by Betty Friedan and published in 1963. The idea known as the feminine mystique was the traditional idea that women have only one part to play in society. They are to have children and stay at home to raise them. In her book, Ms. Friedan urged women to establish professional lives of their own. In the early 1960s, a committee was appointed to investigate the condition of women. It was led by Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a former First Lady. The committee's findings helped lead to new rules and laws. The 1964 Civil Rights Act guaranteed equal treatment for all groups. This included women. After the law went into effect, however, many activists said it was not being enforced. The National Organization for Women, NOW, was started in an effort to correct the problem. The movement for women's equality was known as the Women's Liberation Movement. Activists were called women's libbers. They called each other sisters. Early activists were usually rich, liberal, white women. Later activists included women of all ages, women of color, rich and poor, educated and uneducated. They acted together to win recognition for the work done by all women in America.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.